now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your Sony Open storylines, best bets, everything from the world of golf. And joining me to break it all down, Mark Immelman is here. Hey, Mark.
Hey, boys. What's up? Listen, I am just jacked to be on a podcast with the coach. It's been a while, buddy. How are you doing?
It's great to see you, man. I'm actually the one that's honored, to be honest with you.
Oh, come on now. No, good to be back with you, boys. Everyone good, I hope?
Absolutely.
Everyone's good. That is the coach, Jonathan Coachman. What's up, coach? How's it going?
Oh, I tell you what, it's going pretty good. I tell you what, if this week is anything like last week, I'm going to start making my bets on the Champions Tour because I was great for 54 holes. But it was Sunday that absolutely crushed me. Although Xander and my one and done gave me a lot of cash, so I was happy about that.
That's right. You were the big one and done winner of the week from our little crew here. And Kyle Porter is here. And I got a nice lesson on Swing and Pete before we went live here, which is depicted on your cap. And I absolutely love it. Hey, KP.
How's it going?
It's going great. How's it going? I'm
great. I gave you a tutorial on how there's swinging Pete, wrestling Pete, baseball Pete, softball Pete, firefighter Pete. There's all kinds of Petes. So
I'm gonna need some firefighter Pete swag in my life. It's
pretty
that's
awesome. It's pretty good.
there's that Pete's coffee too. Do you get that in the full water?
That's spelled differently. So no, they're out on that.
All right, gentlemen, we've got a lot of news around the world of golf. Not all of it is positive. Some of it might make you uncomfortable, but these are things that we have to talk about. And we're going to start with the movement of a major championship. The 2022 PGA Championship is moving from Trump Bedminster, and the PGA president, Jim Richardson, in partial quotes, said it has become clear that conducting the PGA Championship at Trump Bedminster would be detrimental to the PGA of America brand and would put at risk the PGA's ability to deliver our many programs and sustain the longevity of our mission. Kyle, you had a write-up on CBSSports.com about this. It's obviously major news when a major championship gets moved, and this is not the only potential major championship that is distancing itself from the president.
Yeah, it's not. You know, the RNA came out, I think it was the day after on Monday, and basically said, hey, we haven't been going to Turnberry and we're not going there, which was not real. I mean, it was newsworthy, but it wasn't like, you know, I went back and found, so Martin Slumbers is the CEO, I think, of the RNA, president of the RNA. He's in charge of the RNA, whatever his title is. And he said, I pulled a quote from back in, I believe it was 2014, where he said, hey, Turnberry is in the rota. Like, it's one of the nine courses. We haven't gone there recently, but it's still in the road. It might have been 2016. It was right around the time where Trump was about to become the president. And I don't think that's the case any longer. And I think that it's not unreasonable to assume that Portrush has replaced Turnberry in the road. If we're sticking with nine courses, just on the Open Championship side. So, you know, I don't really know what other move there was for either the PGA of America or the RNA. They didn't really have a ton of options after last week, right? And so now for the PGA, they're forced with this, 17-month scenario where they have to come up with a venue during COVID, but hosting it at a time where hopefully it'll be full. And the logistics of that it doesn't seem like that large an amount of time, but the logistics of it are going to be pretty crazy. You know, these things get planned 5, 6, 7 years in advance. Not that they can't pull it off, but it's kind of a tough spot. And I don't know. I don't know what the counter take is to, like, they had no other choice and it's going to be difficult for them for the next 17 months. Is there like an alternate take that I'm missing there?
No, I think both of those are accurate statements. To your point, 2014 is when Bedminster got on the schedule. So this is essentially 8 years in the works. And Mark, looking at some of the other options, right? Because that's kind of where we go from here is, okay, we've got 17 months to kind of figure out what is the host of this event. We've seen things thrown out on golf Twitter, and we've seen things that are more just wishes than realistic options. But that's something that the PGA of America is going to have to figure out.
Yeah, they're going to. And to the Twitter and stuff, I've actually taken a leave of absence from social media for a couple of weeks just to gain my sanity before our West Coast swing begins. But to the West Coast swing, I mean, it was just a few short months ago that we were sort of preparing to go to San Francisco for the PGA Championship. But no one was certain with COVID if we were going to get to go there, if San Francisco, California was going to be open. And we were getting told behind the scenes that, look, Valhalla is essentially waiting in the wings. And so if the plug gets pulled on San Francisco, we'll go straight to Valhalla, where they've had multiple PGA championships and a Ryder Cup before. So it's sort of the PGA's bench, if you will. They've gone there before. And then down the road, they'll have the course that they're building, I understand, in Frisco, Texas. But in terms of finding different venues, it's challenging to Kyle's point, but I don't think it'll be that big a deal because they were basically in the same boat just a few short months ago because no one was really sure if we would get to go to Harding Park. In the end, we did, and it turned out great. So I would, if I was a wagering guy, say that Valhalla is likely to pitch up pretty soon, announcing that they'll take the event.
That is interesting. We'll obviously keep an eye out for that. And coach, I want to mine deeper into a bit of what Kyle was getting to about, you know, the PGA of America and potentially the RNA, their hands being tied. It's not just golf entities that are distancing themselves from the current administration. We've seen plenty of businesses do it as well. But, the statement, I'm looking for the official statement, but it was something to the effect of trying to keep the focus on golf and the players. And that was my big takeaway from this. And I wonder if that's yours as well.
Well, that's kind of where I was going to go, is that you never want, I don't care what the event is, whether it's a golf event, basketball, football, you never want the venue and the story surrounding the venue to outshine the event. And that's what the PGA of America was basically faced with, that if they kept it here, essentially half of the audience or half of whoever would simply walk away because they just didn't want to, whether it's right or wrong, that's not for us to decide, but that's essentially when you're putting political things as part of a sporting event, that's what you're doing, especially in this time when it's so divisive after everything that's happened. They had no choice. The second thing is I'm an ambassador for the PGA of America and for their minority arm and their charity arm, PGA Reach, PGA Works. And what we do and what we're trying to accomplish is nothing but positive and bringing people into the game, diversity into the game, ladies and men and minorities and all of that. And if you're going to do that, then you can't have a situation where you're going someplace where there's so much divisiveness when it's all about inclusivity, if that's the right word. So for those two reasons, the PGA of America had no choice.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Bedminster hosted the U.S. Women's Open in 2000. I think you can check me on this, Rick. I think it was 2016 or 17. Trump was the president.
It was 17.
Okay, 17. And I was going back and kind of reading about that because I sort of remembered it, but not totally. And it was a little bit of a circus because he came there on the weekend and it was just, you know.
Right, he did.
If the sitting president is at an event, it's going to be just – whoever it is, it's going to be a little bit of a mess. I mean, think about how exacerbated that would have been if he would have, and you know, he would have been there and shown up and partaken in it. It just would have been such a, I mean, that's what that whole event would have been remembered by. And like Coach said, that's not what you want in a major championship, you know? And it just became untenable at some point. And you know, maybe you go back to the PGA of America and say, hey, like, why would you even risk this? You had 8 years, you had 4 years really where he was the president. Why would you even like, what's the upside here? You know, like, it's not like there's a shortage of venues that you could take this to. That's the part where I look at the PGA of America and say, well, what, like, how did you think this was going to go? You didn't know this was going to happen, but you certainly knew that the risk far outweighed the reward of going to a place like that. And so, they've kind of put themselves into this corner a little bit as well.
I'm on record of saying the PGA Championship should embrace municipal courses after Harding Park, and let's just find a bunch of munis and run those out there for the next decade or so and see how it goes.
Well, that's a really good point, Rick, given what Coach listed in terms of the mission of the PGA, which is to take the game to the masses, for lack of a better term. So going to public courses, that's where I learned the game. That's where a number of folks learned the game. And so if you really, really want to grow the game, you go there. But Kyle, this sort of builds on your observation there. Venues pay a lot of money to get these major events to their place. And so when golf course X, whatever it might be, goes to an organizing body and says, hey, we're going to give you X million over so many years to get this event, folks are going to go, yeah, absolutely, this works with our finances. And in an era right now where money is a little tight, I can see why an organization would more than likely agree to a situation like that. But your point's well-founded. You can't be having extraneous events being bigger than the event, and certainly bigger than the attraction of the players in the competition.
Well, and the counter to what I said is that they scheduled it before he became president. Mm-hmm. So it would have been awkward to kind of jump in after that. And this is like the best defense that the PGA of America has. It would have been awkward to jump in after that and say, okay, we're out, just because someone that we, a place that we're going to, that person became the president. And, you could have picked a million spots along the way where you could have ejected and probably should have, but that's sort of their best defense if we're looking backward on it.
And Rick, one more thing, if I might. Sure. A lot of these major organizations, they work in concert with each other. They're all a member of the International Golf Federation. So the Masters Club, the RNA, the USGA, the PGA, and a number of, and then all the international tours attend annual meetings in different areas. And so if one organization decides to do X, it's highly likely that the other organization is going to follow suit, just to make sure that there's sort of a consolidated front, if you will. And then they obviously all consult with the PGA and the European Tour, because that's where the talent for the event is coming from. But I was not that surprised when I saw the PGA pulled out and then the RNA quickly followed. This is what they sort of do.
I swear we have good news coming in this show. We're not quite there yet. Justin Thomas made national news this past weekend when he was caught on a hot mic during Saturday's third round of the Century Tournament of Champions. Coach, he got caught muttering a homophobic slur underneath his breath, after he missed a putt. I think I missed this when it originally happened, and I was kind of just scrolling through Twitter, laying in bed later, and saw it, and I couldn't believe it for a lot of reasons. I did a double take when I saw that it was Justin Thomas, who has been historically such a thoughtful player, and he obviously immediately apologized for this, but I was just shocked from a couple of different angles on this.
There are several words that just bother me. They just do. And I think people could probably assume what they are. The word he said and those. And I have a lesbian sister. I'm a minority. But I don't even want to focus on what he said, because he has to figure out why it's in my head. It always drives me crazy when somebody says something or says something offensive and they go, that's not me. I don't use those words. And I can guarantee you, in my lifetime, I've never said one word that's not in my head. It's impossible. It's impossible. So he's got to figure out why that word is in his vocabulary. What I want to focus on is how he reacted to it. And a lot of athletes can look at how he reacted to it and take a big time lesson, because this is not going to stay with him for a very long time because of how he reacted to it. He took ownership. He said it was stupid. It was dumb. I've got to learn a lesson. I've got to figure out why that word is in my vocabulary, but no excuses. It was stupid. I'm embarrassed. And then he walked on, and then he doubled down the next day. So That's the take I take away from it, because we all do stupid things. I don't like those words, but I don't want to say that I'm not going to like Justin Thomas because he used that word. I want to look at how he reacted to it and take a lesson from that.
I was actually, you know, I guess pleasantly surprised that he was asked about it immediately after the round. I think sometimes, Kyle, in the world of golf, we just kind of bury our heads and we'll just move on and get away from this in a couple of weeks. And the fact that he was asked about it immediately, and I have a part of what he told Todd Lewis after his round. He said, it's inexcusable. He said, first off, I just apologize. I'm an adult. I'm a grown man. There's absolutely no reason for me to say anything like that. It's terrible. I'm extremely embarrassed. And he goes on for a little bit. He kind of came back and echoed things the same day, but he seemed to be obviously very aware that what he said was inexcusable and unacceptable.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good on it, just in the way that he kind of framed it and thought about it. And, you know, I thought that, you know, I saw some criticism around like, hey, is there a double standard for people like us who, if Patrick Reed does this, which he did back in 2017, I think, something like that, we go crazy about it. And when JT does it, we kind of, like you said, bury our heads in the sand. And I think there's some truth to that. I think that we could be more critical on things like this, but I also think it matters, like what you've built up leading into that, right? JT's always been open in my interactions with him, always very kind, honest. He's just pleasant, like all these things. And that's not to say that you get a free pass, but certainly like the character that you kind of built your life on, that stuff matters for the people that are talking. It matters for the four of us in the way that we talk about it, right? And those are things that Patrick Reed could probably not say about himself, or maybe some other guys that we've been more critical of. So I thought that was one interesting thing that I was just kind of ruminating on as I thought about this over the weekend, that the, you know, kind of the reputation that JT has among people like us, among media members. And it's not that you like, we should be talking about it for sure. And it is, it's not good. Like it's terrible, but the way he handled it afterward and the 1,000 days that he put in leading up to that, that matters. Like those things matter as well. So I don't know. That was kind of just the way I was thinking about it afterward.
I think, and Mark, I think you can really shed some light on this. You know, the PGA Tour has been historically opaque in its fines, suspensions, its, I don't want to call it, principling of its players, and this kind of renewed more calls for transparency. I think we're seeing sports in general getting more transparent from the organization level down to its athletes, and we're hearing those renewed calls here for the PGA Tour so they could at least come out and say, look, what X player did was wrong. We have assessed this amount of whether it's a fine or whatever it is. We're kind of taking a stand here. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the way that they usually handle these situations.
Well, yeah, they could. Players get fined. I don't even know. And I work for the tour, coach has as well. I mean, we don't know the amounts of the fines that they get. Heck, I'm related to a guy who's played on the tour, and I don't know what the fine structure is because people just don't share it. And personally, you know, with it being a membership organization, the PGA Tour works for the PGA Tour players. I don't see why they have to disclose what fines are, as long as the individual is disciplined. Why do we have to be like sharks in the water chumming around the place to sort of go, well, JT got knocked for 25K for the term that he used? And it's sort of one of those things that not very many folks speak about. I really honestly can't speak very authoritatively on the whole thing. But the thing is for me, is that they're professional golfers playing on the Professional Golfers Tour of America. And so JT did the right thing afterwards. He would have got disciplined afterwards. What the severity of the discipline is, it means nothing to me. As long as he was disciplined and was responsible for his actions. And that's what I love what both Coach and Kyle had to offer, where it's the responsibility of the thing. And it's the situation where, you know, I'm not perfect, but every day I'm striving to be just a little bit better. And in the end, hopefully at the end of my career, you can look up on me and I can be a role model that a young golfer can aspire towards. Because we've seen, you know, a number of folks throughout the years use foul language and stuff. And for the guys that are on television a lot, they get on hot mics often. And it's a joke because guys just levy out checks like they're candy. But I appreciated what JT, how he handled it. It wasn't right. I'm not condoning it whatsoever. And as far as the tour disclosing the information, I don't think it's got anything to do with us, to be honest with you.
See, I disagree on the transparency. I think a lack of transparency can lead to an abuse of power at times. And, you know, that maybe that's not true of the PGA Tour. You know, that might be an extreme thing to say about a sports organization. But I think transparency is compelling, because I think sometimes the PGA Tour likes to purport this like super polished, clean, you know, organization. And it's like, man, that's not real life. That's not compelling. Real life is messy. People are messy. And it's not, I don't know. I'm more compelled by the entire narrative, and not just by like, oh, we're going to sweep this under the rug, but man, we're going to tweet out, you know, the shots that JT hit into 17 on Saturday, 57 times. Like that does not compel me. I'm compelled by the drama and the narrative as a whole. And that's, you know, that's the price of admission for professional athletes. You're out in the public. That's what you do. So I wish there was more transparency across the board, not just from the PGA Tour, but from players as well.
I think where I would fall on it is kind of in both. For what Mark is saying, for me, I don't think it matters to me, but where it does matter, because how many times did we discuss what really happened to Dustin Johnson when he was gone? Right? What really happened to this person when they were gone? Right? So whether it's a fine, whether it's a suspension, a player can right now just go, you know what? I'm not playing next week, when really he could have got suspended for the next week. And I think that when you compare disciplines and punishments, I think that's where I would like to see the transparency, because what is a fine for that as opposed to a fine for Bryson snapping at a photographer when he's walking off? Because then there would be some accountability from the tour, I think, on what you put on certain things and certain transgressions. That's all I would like to see. But as far as do we deserve to know, I think to Mark's point, we don't, but I would like to see it for that reason.
All right, gentlemen, Mike Wann is out at the LPGA this year. He is stepping down, not only the eighth commissioner in LPGA Tour history, but the longest serving commissioner, Mark. And, you know, when you start to read quotes from either players or executives or just peers in general, it appears that he has been widely respected as someone who has kind of taken the LPGA and made it into something great.
He certainly did, and he's earned his rest. I mean, you know, the conversation is, where is Mike Wann going? And the kind of guy that he is, there's always something to achieve. There's always a goal to go and meet, and there's always a difference to make. And we saw him do that with the LPGA, and I'm sure, you know, when the time is right, he'll get snapped up by somebody. But right now, I would say to Mike, if I was counseling him, not that he would seek out my counsel, I'd be like, man, Go and rest on your laurels for a little while. You have poured your heart and your soul into, let's be honest, a difficult property to sell. And he turned that LPGA tour into the right direction. They built some personalities out there. They built a compelling, to use Kyle's term, product. I mean, I find myself turning on the LPGA events often, because there's so many cool personalities and it's so much golf that I can sort of relate to, even though I work on the tour. So Mike did a super job. His lieutenants around him also, they deserve all sorts of kudos. But I think right now, he needs to be on a beach somewhere with a cocktail in his hand, just chilling and resting on his laurels and looking back on what he managed to achieve and the length of his tenure.
I certainly find the LPGA incredibly compelling. They are getting more involved, or at least DraftKings is getting more involved in the LPGA. I think there's going to be a lot more eyeballs on it moving forward. The WGC Mexico history is about to get a little messier, right, KP? We've had WGC Mexico events that, like, oh, let's look at tournament history that wasn't even in Mexico. It's about to get a little bit crazier here, because Bob Herrig of ESPN is reporting that the PGA Tour is expected to announce that the WGC Mexico Championship will not be played in Mexico City this year. And it's essentially comes down to business again here. Grupo Salinas, which is the sponsoring group of this event, which, by the way, not sure this was a great sponsorship. What is that company? What do they do?
It's a conglomeration of organizations, and really, there was so much charitable work they were doing down there.
Pretty specific answer.
Well, I mean, they've got a number of companies, basically. They are essentially a holding company. I don't know if I'm using the right vernacular. But yeah, it's probably going to be messy, and I'll let Kyle comment. But just from a personal point of view, color me very depressed about this announcement, because I loved going down to Mexico City for this event.
Yeah, Chapultepec is great. Phenomenal.
It's awesome course. They treated us like we were royalty. And I had that event circled on my calendar every year. And when I got the word that I wasn't going down there, and we sort of knew in advance that this was likely to happen, I was a little disappointed, to say the least.
So Grupo Salinas, KP, does, you know, they don't want to hold an event with no fans. So it looks like they're going to be out here. And it is believed that we might get an extension of this little Florida swing again, right? So we might get a 4 tournament swing with the API, the Players Championship, and Honda. No courses have been officially released or anything like that, but a little extension of the Florida swing.
Yeah. Grupo Salinas, by the way, a holding company. Do they just hold thumbs all the time, Mark?
I don't know, Kyle. Here they are. Coach, just to fill you in, all right, there's a backstory to that. In America, you guys cross your fingers. Well, where I'm from, we hold thumbs. Kyle, he's held me to this for the longest time.
It's great.
Very good.
Look, Rick, the last thing we need is another PGA Tour event in Florida. I'm sorry. Like, the swing right now is fine. You know, Honda, Players, Arnold Palmer, those are fine. The thing that I wish they would do, and you know, the PGA of America won't do this with the PGA Championship, is take it, Mexico is international, take it across the ocean, take it across a couple oceans, take it to Royal Melbourne, take it, you know, it's a World Golf Championship, right? It's not a United States Golf Championship. You know, we've got plenty of those. I wish that they would kind of expand a little bit. And, you know, you do that. We've seen the PGA Tour do it with the Asia swing. And it's hard because they don't get the ratings and some of the coverage probably that they would love because of the time difference and all these different things. But I don't know, man. I keep going back to that the 2019 President's Cup in Australia. It was phenomenal. And maybe it was the course, maybe, I don't know what it was, but it was, you know, the timing of it worked. So I think that would be, that won't happen. And they will end up going to Florida because it fits in, it's easier, all those different things. But that's my wish. I wish that they would go somewhere like that.
Yeah, Valspar was canceled last year, Coach, and wasn't that part of the Florida swing for a while? They kind of got a real tough spot in the schedule now.
I mean, it was at a spot in the schedule where Tiger played, remember, and then Jordan played for a couple of years, and then he kind of backed out. And these spots are very, very important. And when they get moved around, I can only imagine what it's like. And I'm sure, Mark, you've been in these meetings, that when you have that cherry spot, and then all of a sudden you get moved and there's nothing you could do about it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it just disappears. And I would be very, very frustrated if I was some of these tournament organizers and you just take what they give you. And Valspar seems to be kind of one of those tournaments that kind of fell that way.
Well, Rick, to add to what Coach offered there, you look at what the tour did with the events coming back from the COVID lockdown and how you've got to go to an organization and a tournament director who you're going to say to him, if I'm Jay Monahan, going, well, sorry, we're going to have to cancel because of COVID. Now, that's largely understandable. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to it than just having an event. There's the charitable initiatives. There's all the stuff that's been going on for years to get back to the PGA conversation. And that's why moving an event like this, you know, it was great to have it down in Mexico, but the tour sort of could control the television compound over there, which broadcasts the entire thing, so NBC could travel down there. But when you go down to Aussie, like for the President's Cup, we had part of our crew, I'd say maybe 50% or more, were local folks down from Australia. And so managing the whole broadcast of the thing is wildly different, not to mention logistically very, very challenging for all involved. But I just want to say to this whole thing and to Valspar and stuff, how the tour got these sponsors and these organizations and these events to play along and fit into schedules like this. And somehow everyone came out kind of smelling like a rose at the end of it, with a miracle in itself. And I mean, I could only imagine the conversations that were going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I remember when Workday stepped up and took that yeah. event. Like, I don't know how many weeks it had. Like, oh, we'll take that. No problem. You know, I promised some good news gentlemen and coach, we got a little taste of some potential good news here, because Augusta National announced that they plan to allow a limited number of patrons in the gates for the 2021 Masters. And here's the caveat: provided it can be done safely. We've talked about this at times on this podcast in the past. If there's anybody I trust to like to remove themselves from the outside world, put a bubble over the golf course and figure it out, it's Augusta National. So I'm like very cautiously optimistic about this.
I think it's gonna be great. And I think all four of us have been there, right? I know Kyle's worked in, and obviously Mark works it. Oh, Rick, you've never been there.
No.
Okay. I got to do digital highlights for 3 years, and it's still the highlight of my career. No matter what I've done or what I will do, there's nothing like working the Masters. And I think we also can agree that this past year in November, it wasn't the same. It didn't play hard enough. There wasn't the resounding cheers that you can hear two holes over, and the player looks around, and all the stuff that we've come to know and love about the Masters. So even having a limited number of fans is going to make, I think, a world of difference in how it's presented. And also being in April when it's supposed to be, and the way the course is presented. I love the announcement today. And now we've got 3 months to figure out how many, how much are they going to cost? Who are they going to give their passes to? Who are they going to pull them back from? Because as we know, those passes are everything. They're everything. And once you give them up, you don't get them back. So I'm going to be interested to find out who gets to come in and who doesn't get to come in.
KP, you have a piece up on CBSSports.com right now. Do we have any indication how they're going to decide who gets in, how they're going to limit where you sit, where you stand? I guess we have some time to figure that out, but any early indications?
No, but you know, they have that lottery system anyway. So I wonder if they just put all the people who currently had, because the original plan, I was looking back at this, was to put the 2020 badge holders into 2021, right? Well, that's not possible. So they're going to, it seems like, draw from a, I don't know, percentage of that, whether it's 15%, 20%. And then it seems like, based on their statement and, you know, kind of what was surrounding it, that if you don't get in 2021, you just get your money back and that's it. And then there's a reset for 2022. Now, that might change, but that's sort of the way it seems right now, which I don't know. It kind of sucks for, you know, some people that maybe that was their first time or whatever, but that's just the collateral damage of a pandemic, I guess.
Yeah, I'm wondering, living in Georgia, because our lottery tonight is worth like $500 million or something silly like that. I mean, this lottery now for Masters in April, this might be bigger to certain folks than getting that amount of money. It's crazy, the allure of this event. And every year I get to go, and every year I count myself fortunate. And then they manage to do things around there that they continue to surprise, they continue to set the bar, and the Augusta National Golf Club are just incredible about this. And I can imagine, I don't know how many folks, Kyle, maybe you can shed some light on this, how many folks will get to get in. And when you get word that you've made it into the Masters lottery and you get to go first time back, I mean, that's going to be an event bar none. And me personally, I'm just going to be so disappointed that I won't be able to see Kyle Porter frequently on our monitors, because now they will be
friends out there. Nobody got more camera shine than KP at this year's Masters behind everybody on the tee box. You got a lot of good camera shine, Kyle.
Hey, don't stay in the media center. Get out there. Get out there among the people.
It's the press building. Come on now.
I think there will be I don't know. I have no idea. This I'm guessing. I think like 8,000 people.
One day or total?
One day.
Okay.
Maybe fewer than that. Well, you know, what did Houston have? 2,000 a day?
Two, I think, yeah.
Augusta's so spread out. I think
they can comfortably handle that. And in terms of controlling the inflow and the outflow and creating a bubble, they're doing that basically anyhow with the event. And so I think in terms of management and testing and stuff, by then they'll have the rapid test stuff happening, and it's going ahead, I'm sure.
You know what we're going to say real quick? The memes we're going to see is the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory memes, that when they open up, you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, we got in. It's going to be like getting the golden ticket for the next year or two.
We've got to talk Sony Open here, but I mean, the Buffalo Bills did allow 6,700 people into their playoff game. They required a negative COVID test from one of their partners, and it cost $75 to get. And I'm sure there would be a ton of people who would be willing to go through that process to get into Augusta National for an April Masters. Gentlemen, we've got to talk Sony Open. We got to get back to our little contest where we get 100 units to go out on William Hill and Spence, and we've got to give our one and done leans. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. So here's what we've been doing. Second week in, we all take 100 units, $100, whatever you want to call it. We go over to William Hill and we make a betting card. Greg Ducharme, he won last week. He was 3-2. He was our big winner. And he risked what? Half of his units on Lonto Griffin to finish in the top 20. That's what put him over the top. So we're going to start here, KP, with your betting card. And you've started to live up to your promise that you're just going to make a bunch of bets here. You're going to put producer Jacob to work. You're going to make a bunch of bets. Give us some of the highlights of your card.
Yeah, the text that producer Jacob has blocked my number probably this afternoon. I'll go through a couple here that I like. Jerry Kelly, top 20 finish. He's finished in the top 24 the last 7 years. You're shaking your head like that was just a fool's errand. Am I foolish for doing that?
No, I mean, listen, there are, and you have both of them on your card here, like the course history guys that, you know, it's Charles Howell the third, who's what, 19 for 19 in cuts. He's got 10 top 10, Jerry Kelly. Like, I just love the opportunity that you get to put a top 20 wager on Jerry Kelly. It's 2021. I love it.
Yeah, it's units. So who cares?
You should have gone all in with that better.
Yeah. All $100.
So the other, I'll go through the three I really like. Sungjae as top Asian player. I thought he played really well last week. Finished out well also. I think Joaquin is going to have a big week. I don't know. I've been kind of thinking about his Tournament of Champions for the last couple of days, and it feels like that's just kind of the start of his 2020. I think he's gonna have a monster year. I really do. And maybe I'm wrong about that. You guys can laugh at me in 3 months when he's missed six cuts in a row. But I just think the age that he's at, I mean, I was looking back, if you look at his 19, 20, and 21 year old years, they were different than Colin Morikawa's. But on Data Golf, if you line him up with Colin Morikawa 19, 20, 21, they're pretty similar. And Joaquin was even a little bit better. Now, Morikawa was in college, so it's hard to kind of like compare the two. But Data Golf does a good job of accounting for the fact that Morikawa was in college. Joaquin's playing on the PGA Tour. I'm fired up about his year. And then lastly, I think Morikawa is another guy that's going to have a big week. So I've got him in a three ball over Harris English, who I'm fading pretty hard this week. And then Hideki, who may or may not still use a wedge when he putts, I think.
I don't think it could get any worse. Yeah, Harris English, you also have to miss the cut at 4-1, reveling in his newly found $1.3 million and Tournament of Champions victory. Mark, we're going to pull up your betting card here next. And you have one on here in regards to whether this event is going to finish in a playoff. And I want to remind people, I think the last time we got a Mark playoff prognostication, it was like a three-way playoff at some random event, and sure enough, it comes in.
I was sucking wind when that happened. Complete fluke. I'm hopeful it happens again because of plus 300. The Sony Open over the last, I think since 2016, has had three playoffs in the last five events. Now, the two separators there were blowouts. When I was there calling Justin Thomas, and it's one of my prized possessions, I'm going to show a little flex over here. There's the 59 golf ball.
There you go, Mark.
Check that out. So I was there when he just went bananas and shot like 27 under par or whatever it is, and that's sort of the outlier. So I love that bet there of a playoff at Wailea, you know, plus 300. It's the kind of place where the way the golf course finishes with 16 being a pretty daunting par four, albeit not long. Then you've got 17, the par three with some crosswind that can be a real small target, and then 18. It's the sort of par five where at its length, these guys, if they get the tee shot and play, you can get a short iron in there. So threes can be made quickly and you can post and then have one of the leaders come in and hopefully tie. So it lends itself to playoffs. But that all being said, you know, that 18th hole is no doddle, like we saw Ryan Palmer last year blow one out of bounds in the playoff. And so, or I think regulation or playoff, whatever it was. And so it's a strange sort of a golf course to finish, but it sort of finishes the way that playoffs are likely. And then I'm with Kyle. I've added some bets over there because I was looking at the wrong site for betting numbers, as you can imagine, because I don't read rundowns. So I think Lanto is a good pick over Sergio this week, and that's my nod to the new father, Greg Ducharme. And then I was watching Joaquin Niemann play last week, and I've always known he was good. I watched him as an amateur a little bit. But last week, he looked like he had taken a different step in the game. He's been playing so well and had that breakout at the President's Cup. But he just looked complete last week in Kapalua. And I know it's a different golf course, but there's something about guys that play this. You've had guys who have won the Aloha Swing. Both Ernie, Justin Thomas has done it. And Niemann didn't win, but the way he's playing, he can play well anywhere. So I have him as the top South American. He's in a group there with, let me just check real fast, Abraham Anser, Sebastian Munoz, Emiliano Grillo, Carlos Ortiz, and Johnny Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I have him as the low South American, and then also to win Group B. Both of those are pretty sound bets, so I'm looking for the young man to get a bit busy and win me some money.
That 59 that JT shot included a bogey. Always love when that happens. I think he bogeyed 11, I want to say. Okay, so Mark.
Eagle the last for the ninth hole, the last hole for 59.
Oh, that's right. He finished on nine, right?
Yeah.
In Spieth's face, too. Spieth was there for it.
Yeah. And Daniel Berger was the third member of the group. That could be one of your trivia questions there, right?
Oh, I'm adding it to the First Cut Trivia database. Coach, we're going to head over to your betting card now, and I'm pulling it up here real quick. You have four bets here, so I think you are confident in the bets that you have made, and they are mostly consisting of matchups, and the trend here continues. Joaquin Niemann continues to show up on our cards this week.
Yeah, I was going to tell Kyle that people might be laughing at you in 6 months, but we're not laughing at you today because we're betting you on Joaquin Niemann for damn sure. Now, I will say this. As far as betting is concerned last week, I really didn't enjoy it because I don't like betting on a tournament where if your guy gets down by two or three shots, you have no shot of making that up because there's no danger. Now, to Mark's point, this week we got a little bit of danger. So I went back 6 years, and I looked up the numbers for 6 years, and I looked at the names. And I looked at the numbers, and I said, who's going to hit it well off the tee? Who's going to hit it well strokes gained approach? Those were my two big numbers that I looked at, and this is what I come up with. We know that Russell Henley has had success on this course before. 2013 first event here, and I think he didn't play last week. He's going to be fresh. Brian Palmer is going to have a little bit of a letdown because he made a run at the Century. So I think that's a lock. I'm putting 35 units on that.
I'm confident.
I'm about the slow play, the slow burn. The other two guys are about the long odds, not me. I'm going minus 118. And then you can see Webb, he plays well here. I think Morikawa takes a step back. I think we're all on Joaquin. And also I like Joaquin Niemann as a top 10 finish. So if he plays well, I could get back in the game because last week I was 0-for, and I'm fading DJ forever. Screwed me over on Sunday. That's Dustin Johnson, I'm never picking him again.
Hey, that's a bad move. Let me advise you. What's Augusta National?
Okay. Fair enough. All right, I just brought him back in, Mark. I just brought him back in.
We'll have one back.
There you go.
Russell Henley in this field since the restart, best player in strokes gained approach. He's averaging like 1.18 per round. He's been absolutely phenomenal. We're going to go to my betting card here, which is completely different than Coach's. Coach has a lot of matchups and some top tens. I'm going kind of boom or bust. I've picked a lot of outrights. I've sprinkled a little bit thinking, hey, I hit one of these every couple weeks, every 6 to 8 weeks. I'm just going to keep having progress made on this bankroll. So I've loaded up on winners, and I went with Webb Simpson, who is not going to lose like 6.5 strokes off the tee again this week. I don't know if that's even possible at Wailea, a place he's obviously had a ton of success. I've sprinkled win outrights on Sebastian Munoz, 40-1. Sebastian Munoz over the final 54 holes last week was second only to Joaquin Niemann. Played his final 54 holes 18 under par. Seabass getting it done. Cam Davis, I've sprinkled 5 units on at 100-1. We've talked a lot this week about guys who are going to be accurate. They're going to hit their irons well. Cam Davis going to try a different approach. He's going to go bomb and gouge style, see if he can improve on that.
You love Cam Davis.
I love Cam Davis.
What's that your guy? The guy's, he's legitimate.
There you go. I got Mark's endorsement as well. So, yeah, now I even love it even more. He's the best. And then I've gone with Daniel Berger, who I'm foreshadowing for something I want to talk about in a second to finish inside the top 10. I've got a Brendan Todd group winner. And there was a strange one on Will Hill. This is interesting, Kyle. There's only two options for the top Great Britain or Irish player. It's either Russell Knox or Ben Taylor. And Mark's telling me this is a bad bet.
Yeah, I want to have a private bet with you for a bottle of wine, and I will take Ben Taylor with all love to Russell Knox. I'll have Ben Taylor in that bet if you want to take it, Rick.
Let's do a wine bet.
Okay, cool.
Love it.
Wait. For the record, the new dad still hasn't sent the wine from the previous bet in 2020. Just
come on.
Let that get out.
Mark, you need to get some odds here because Knox is a heavy, heavy
Kyle,
favorite.
I'll take this straight up.
I'm going straight up here. And Rick, I'll let you pay me in Augusta National.
Oof, this is getting better for me all over. No problem. I'd be happy.
There we go. 2021, the first wine bet.
Oh, we've got a wine wager alert. Thank you, producer Jacob. Yeah, this one stuck out to me. Okay, so now we're doing this, Mark. What is it about Ben Taylor? I mean, there's the vast majority of the listening audience probably has no idea who he is.
First time I watched him play, he played 2 years of golf down at Nova Southeastern, which is down in South Florida. It was just really sound. Came over from England and then went to Louisiana State, LSU. And won the national championship for them over there. And since then, he's bounced around between the Corn Ferry Tour, some in Europe. But he's the sort of guy who just hits a real heavy sort of a ball, and playing in South Florida, playing in Louisiana, playing in the UK, I figure he's going to do pretty well in the wind. And the thing about Wailea, it likes you to move the ball from right to left. You know, there are some holes that move in the opposite direction. And the last time I saw Ben play, that was sort of the ball flat shape. So I'm a little hot on that bet right now.
All right, we've got a bottle of wine on it. Let's move on to our one and done. Coach, you were the big winner out of us last week. You had Xander Schauffele. I think he netted you 250,000. Remember, you or 280,000, excuse me. Now, you've just kicked this off. So Xander's the only golfer that you have used. You have everyone else at your disposal. Where are you thinking you're heading this week?
Well, I had a lot of different guys that I thought about, and then I'm sure like you guys have been doing from the fall, you go, oh, no, I want to use them there. I want to use them there. So for me, the one course that my pick has always done well on, and he's won here, is Russell Henley. So I'm going to go with my pick to win is the same as my pick for the one and done. I think I'm going to pocket 250 or larger, and I think by the time the Masters rolls around, I'll be in first place.
Oh wow, this is getting
already
spicy.
counting money over there.
I love it. I'm likely leaning towards Daniel Berger. I think that's obviously Webb Simpson is the betting favorite, but there are so many great places to use Webb. You can use him at Wyndham. You can use him at RSM. You can use him at Waste Management. You can use him at Harbortown. Use him wherever you want. Or you can use him here. I'm going to go with Berger, who I think he's like 12 or 14 to 1 at the moment. That's probably the shortest you're ever going to get him, KP. Like all year long, I mean, he might play some random event where he's one of the headliners, but he's going to play a lot of good fields too. This might be the best odds you get on Berger all year, and I'm a sucker. I'm going to bite.
Yeah, it might be maybe Colonial as well, because he'll go as the defending champ, and you know, that field won't be as loaded this year. Can I pick John Rahm again for a third time? Is that available?
Yeah, you can. You just won't get any points for him.
I'm either going to go with Charles Howell, Swingin' Pete.
Nice.
Or I might go Webb because I think that everybody else is going to save him for other spots. And I don't know. I don't love that he had COVID at the end of December and, you know,
You can't pick Webb. You already picked him.
Oh, thanks for saving me.
You picked him at RSM.
There I go again. I'll probably go with Charles Howell.
You already picked Charles.
It's good to see that Kyle puts so much time into this pick every week. Apparently, he doesn't even look at his list of guys that he's.
He's kind of contrarian at times too. He just decides to go with someone completely off the grid just to create a conversation.
I did already use Russell Henley. He won me like $300K at Zozo or at CJ Cup. One of the ones that was in California. Oh,
yeah. Zozo. Yeah. He won you $315,000 at Zozo. In Kyle's defense, this spreadsheet is new to all of us, so we have to remember to check it. Mark, looking at your picks, your most recent pick, Patrick Reed, earned you $75,000. Before that, you sat in the penalty box for Mayakoba. You picked Sungjae Im at the RSM. So I ask you now, who do you think you'll pick for this week's Sony Open?
I'm vacillating. As you know, I'm saving Webb for Wyndham because
I know that. Webb at Wyndham, Rory at Eastlake, somebody at Pebble. Do you have somebody at Pebble?
That's no. I've actually won with Phil at Pebble.
Have you really?
I'm saving Berger for the Honda. Hometown game over there, and you know the way he hits the ball in the wind. Mm-hmm. But I'm vacillating right now between Neiman, who I'm so high on right now, and then. I have a sense that we're going to see. I talked about the king of the Aloha swing. Ernie's done it. JT's done it. And the way Harris English is playing right now, he is looking pretty primed. And so right now, I'm between Harris and Joaquin, and it's going to be a coin toss for me on Wednesday evening.
All right.
I like the Harris English. I think that could be. I could see that happening actually.
Oh, the way he's playing. I had a brief chat. We traded messages with Justin Parsons, his coach, this morning. And I shot him a text because I was writing an article on, you know, lessons you can learn from last week at the Century. And I said to him, you've been working hard on the wedge game, hadn't you? And he said, absolutely, because we've identified that as an area where Harris can really tighten it up. You know, he's got the big wide swing, drives the ball well and such. And so they've been spending so much time on the scoring stuff, and you saw it on the par fives. I looked into the numbers last week, and he was better on the par fives than Bryson, Dustin Johnson, and John Rahm, and he's shorter than all of them. So now at Wailea, you're going to get a few wedges in hand. So I figure that's a good pick there too.
All right, Mark Immelman, choose wisely because you are in the lead, $3.5 million, and we are nipping at your heels. But for now, that'll do it. That has been our mega preview pod for this week's Sony Open. That right there, Jonathan Coachman. You can follow him on Twitter at TheCoachRules. Mark Immelman, who you can find at Mark_Immelman. That's Kyle Porter, who you can find at KylePorterCBS. You can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.